previously on Corporate Homing.
Living your best life within your means.
You might just want to have one big splurge account.
We don't tell ourselves that it's out of reach until we look.
Tell me how you did that. Tell me what that means.
On today's episode of Corporate Homing,
we are delighted and happy to welcome to the podcast Beth Walker.
I went to law school because I thought it would be interesting. Money isn't everything. I'm looking to be challenged and fulfilled. You have to think about yourself as the CEO of your own career.
Do you suggest that people inflate their salaries?
What's up, homies?
Hey, homies.
Welcome back to the Corporate Homie Podcast.
Woo, woo.
I said a woo, woo. I've been practicing my whoop. I'm ready.
I love it.
We are super excited today because Red Bull excited because it's one of those days where we actually have a guest. So you get to hear from more than just Bimitra and myself, and today we are delighted and happy to welcome to the podcast Beth Walker.
Welcome.
Hello.
Hi,
Beth.
I'm so excited to be here. Hi.
And we are so happy to have you. For those homies who do not know Beth, Beth is a principal and senior vice president with Newhouse and Noblin, and in fair disclosure, Bimitra and I have a rule so far that we don't have anyone on the podcast that one of us doesn't know. And Beth and I have known each other for, I don't know, how long, Beth, have we known each other?
You know what? I bet it's been since the summer of 2003, right?
Okay.
Oh,
I think
wow.
So.
Nice.
Is that when you summered?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh. So like seven.
Almost that much?
Almost 17 years. Yeah. So we won't. Gosh, that's so crazy. But we used to work together. At all of our first law firms, neither one of us work there today, but have remained friends. And Beth started off practicing and now is a recruiter. And that's why we have her on the show today, is to talk a little bit about knowing your worth and compensation and how to negotiate and all those things. But before we jump into it, Beth, why don't you tell the homies a little bit about yourself and your story and how you came to be in recruiting and compensation.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So I love what you guys are doing, and obviously heard many of the podcasts. So I went to law school because I thought it would be interesting, not because I had, you know, people in my family who were, I do have one uncle who's a lawyer, but I'd never talked to him about it. And, you know, so I just thought, well, what am I going to do next? I'm somebody who I worked, you know, three jobs to put myself through undergrad, went to law school only because I got a full ride and was, you know, it kind of made sense because of that. And then found myself practicing law and not loving it at all. I was a pretty unhappy litigator, and I just wanted to figure out what's a different way that I can use my legal degree and my background. And so, and Dimitra knew me during all of this transition and craziness, and kind of went to a legal recruiter to talk about options. One of the people I connected with was about to have a baby, go on maternity leave. And she said, honestly, I want to be a stay-at-home mom. I'm looking for my replacement. Would you consider legal recruiting? And I thought, well, I didn't even know. I didn't think about, you know, that as a path. And so the more I thought about it, I kind of had to set my own ego aside a little bit and go, okay, I've spent all this time, you know, going through this program and trying to learn to be a young lawyer. But I was really unhappy. I was sort of, you know, envious of the folks at Starbucks making my many coffees every day. And so I thought, well, I'm going to try it, you know? And so I really kind of stepped out just thinking I'll be able to go back to practicing if this is a complete failure. So,
right.
You know, I didn't know. But that was many years ago now. And so now at this point, I've done this a whole lot longer than I ever practiced.
Right.
And I love it.
So Beth, how long did you practice versus how long you've been doing the recruiting?
I only practiced a little over 2 years. So not long at all. Long enough to feel very burned out. Believe it or not, I think when I think back, it's just a blip, you know. But I met so many amazing people and I learned a lot about myself. And so I started recruiting in the fall of 2006.
Okay. Very good. Very good.
I did not realize that you went into recruiting so quickly. Like I have such a vivid memory of when you decided to make that transition. Tell us a little bit about, you know, why you were hesitant to go into recruiting and then ultimately decided it might be a good fit for you.
You know, I really don't think I knew. I think that I just felt like I knew I needed to do something different. And it was something that it was an option that was available to me. I was looking at some other options at the same time. And it was the most interesting. Like I said, that, you know, I really did have a lot of ego wrapped up in practicing law, even though I kind of hated it. I just didn't know that I was going to enjoy it. But I felt like when I gave notice at the firm that Demetra mentioned we were both at, the message I got was really positive. Like, if this doesn't work out, come on back. And that gave me a lot of comfort.
Right.
You know, and so it was a huge risk and a big change. Fortunately, I've just loved it. And I still get to use my legal background, but in a different way in my training. And so I'm still, you know, I'm surrounded by lawyers every single day. And, you know, so it's worked out just really well for me. And it's very fulfilling.
So that sounds awesome. It sounds like you found your passion around recruiting. Can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, or to the homies about how relationships have played a role in your work and like how you found your first client or your first clients, you know, for the homies to understand that journey?
I think people don't really understand how it works and what our job really is as recruiters. So yes, relationships are everything. You know, interestingly enough, at this point, so I'm the third partner in my firm, and I run the Houston office. And so at this point, I am not really recruiting per se anymore. I'm kind of more the client contact and managing the office.
Okay.
But I spent a lot of time in the trenches recruiting, you know, and I think good recruiters can really be so helpful in times of transition. And, you know, what I always tell candidates who are, who I'm talking to, you know, folks reach out to me and they want to talk about potential transitions or when should I think about transition? I always say, I kind of think you have to think about yourself as the CEO of your own career.
That's so funny, Beth, because I always say on the podcast that everybody should be the president and CEO of whatever their name is enterprise.
Yeah, you always say that. So there you go.
That's right. I mean, I really believe that. And maybe you look around and kind of explore that and you're aware of that and you gain more comfort and sort of peace of mind knowing you're in the right place. And that's awesome. But I think knowing that is really valuable. And I think that keeping yourself kind of informed and just knowing what the options are at any given time is a really good thing. And so recruiters can help with that. You know, I think it's important to remember if you reach out to a recruiter, if they reach out to you, you as the candidate, applicant, job seeker are not the recruiter's client. The recruiter's client is a company that's hiring. Now, there are some groups out there that want candidates to pay them to kind of market them around. I haven't seen good examples of that from where I sit. And so the reputable recruiters across industries that I know and respect are paid by the company that's hiring.
So the organization hires you to find a fit for a role that they have.
That's right.
So it's important to remember when you're working with the recruiter that while they may seem like a confidant and are a resource, their ultimate obligation is to the organization that's employed them.
That's exactly right.
What are some mistakes or mishaps that you've seen candidates do because they don't understand that dynamic?
So I think a couple of things. Law firm associates in particular mistreat recruiters and are rude to recruiters when they call. And that happens, and we laugh because then we say, oh, you know, we make a note of that, right? So we're probably not going to be as helpful down the road. And just so common respect and decency is and remembering that relationships are important is critical. But I think understanding that we have an obligation to our client to share the information that we have. That said, when you're speaking with a recruiter, you might as well be forthcoming and honest about why you're looking, about the circumstances of departures in the past, that kind of thing, because we're probably going to figure it out, and we can help you through the best way to honestly work through maybe difficult transitions in the past and that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, our client is our client, and so we owe it to our client to disclose information that we have that we feel they need, if that makes sense.
That's awesome. So, okay, so this is a question I've always wanted to ask a recruiter. Like, do you suggest that people inflate their salaries? Because I feel like when people are transitioning jobs, they add like a mythical 15% to their existing base salary.
And before I answer that, let me just say, so there is a trend, you know, a handful or more of states now, it is the law that you are not allowed to ask anymore what their compensation is on the application or during the, during the candidacy. And I love that trend.
Okay.
Because what I see is when folks are under market compensation wise for whatever reason, and there's a lot of reasons that can happen, they tend to, because of that question, they tend to stay under market for their career, and it's unfair. And so I really love this trend away from being able to ask that question in particular. But, you know, where I live in Texas, you can still ask it. And so a lot of times when you're filling out an online application, for example, it'll be right there. What's your current compensation? And so, you know, that's the reality that we're still working within right now. And like I said, it's not my favorite. And I think I would never advise lying. I just can't.
You know? Sure, sure.
But I think what my counsel would be, if you feel you're under market where you are, then that's probably a big reason why you're looking. And so I think if you're given an opportunity in an online application to add some commentary, or if it's something that you can address in an in-person interview, you know, I think that the narrative should be something like, look, money isn't everything. I'm looking to be challenged and fulfilled. I'm looking for the right culture, the right environment, but I also want to be within market compensation for what I'm doing. And, you know, it sends a message to me when, you know, I'm in an environment currently where that's not the case. And it's certainly something that's, you know, one of the reasons that I'm in the marketplace and open to new opportunities.
I personally always skirted that conversation regarding salary because I didn't want to lowball myself or price myself out of the market. And I always just answer something benign that's similar to what you said, Beth, that, you know, I want something that's in line with my skill set and what the market will support, but really try to stay away from giving a range or a number because I just didn't want to be boxed in one way or the other.
So that's right. I want to kind of touch on the compensation, and I want to make sure we get back to relationships too. So don't let us put a pin in the relationship because I want to talk a little bit about that. But one of the reasons why we wanted you to come on the show is we read Mika, and I never say her name, her last name, right?
Savinsky
from Morning Joe. And she wrote a book on, you know, compensation.
Knowing your worth.
And knowing your worth and how many women mm-hmm. And I would dare say it translates to people of color who are not paid their worth, and not just because the market is more favorable to majority white men, but also because they don't know how to ask for to be paid what they're worth. They don't know how to negotiate. Yeah. So I want you to talk a little bit about that. Like, have you seen that? Is that a trend that you see?
100%
Come in and they're like, okay, go ahead.
Yes. So I think it starts with knowing what market compensation is. So let me just touch on that and then move into your actual question. So Bimitra, you said, you know, you skirt the issue a little bit and you say, I want to be be paid what I'm worth and what the job requires and that kind of thing. And that's right. But then you got to start scrambling and doing your homework in the background. They already have a salary range, right? I mean, they've got a budget. So they know what their budget is. So you got to kind of figure out what their budget is so that you're not negotiating against yourself. So I think talking to your contacts, looking at salary surveys, you know, get as much information as you can to kind of have optics into, okay, in this industry, in this part of the country, you know, at my level, what are people getting paid? And not only what is that base salary, but I think one of the mistakes that I see a lot of women in particular make is a focus on only the base salary and not looking at the other components of an offer. You know, even the benefits, and you can always ask for a benefit summary, right, or an overview. That can be a huge difference from place to place. It can, and that's real money too. You know, if you're having to pay $2,000 a month for family's health care insurance at one place versus, you know, something really nominal at another place, that's a huge difference that you need to understand and know. So anyway, educate yourself about what the salary range ought to be first. But then to answer your question, absolutely. What I see is women in particular being a little bit more, and I hate to generalize like that, but over the years doing this as long as I have, it's much more common for men in the process, in my opinion, to really be hard charging when it comes to the salary negotiation and unapologetic about it. I think that women feel like they're going to set the wrong tone for the relationship if they have a hard salary negotiation at the beginning of a potential employment relationship. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Sure. So how do homies go about, like, if they have no idea what the market pays for a job, is that where the relationship with a recruiter comes in, or an internal
it can help.
Person?
Yes, for sure. Because we've got access to salary survey data, but I mean, it's not like we're the only ones. You can Google a lot of good examples there. You can look at, some companies are really open about what their salary ranges are for positions when they post them, and that's helpful. So I think there's different ways you can gather data points, but yes, relationships with recruiters, you know, if you've been nice to recruiters when they call you about openings, and then you call them back and say, hey, we've talked in the past, and, you know, here's what's going on with me. I've got this. I'm working with this company through other channels. Good recruiters will take the time to talk you through that and tell you what they're seeing in the marketplace. And and just that's invaluable, because that's incidental knowledge, but it's real data points for probably the city you live in, right?
So you said something that was really important, which is the recruiters work, their clients are the company and not the candidates. Although the value that you bring is you have access to a pool of qualified candidates. So how do candidates create and maintain a positive relationship with the recruiter when they're not disgruntled and unhappy and ready to move, when they're still potentially a passive candidate? So you're not just trying to say, hey, don't ever call me again, but I'm not ready for a new opportunity right now. Can you share a little bit with the homies about what we can do to cultivate
for
that
sure.
relationship?
Yeah. Yeah. So look, a good recruiter is going to find you. That's their job. And so if you're a good recruiter and you've got your, you know, your assignment from your client is to find somebody that fits a particular profile, you're going to find the folks in the marketplace that fit that profile. What I tell people is it doesn't hurt, though, to be the low-hanging fruit or to be top of mind when those positions become available. So if you can, you know, if a recruiter calls you for something you're not interested in, and you take the time to say, you know what, it's not the right time for me. I so appreciate you thinking of me. Let me think if there's anybody else in my network that, you know, it might make sense to put you in contact with, right? And maybe you do and maybe you don't. But I think just, you know, common courtesy and kind of answering an email or, you know, being responsive in some way is really helpful. And then I think down the road, if you need some help and you reach out to them and you say, you know, look, I could use some guidance with this salary negotiation. I do that all the time. And I love it. I mean, this stuff is interesting to me. It's something that I need to be paying attention. So I tell people, please call me. You know, if you get an offer through other channels and you want to talk through it and you want to know if you're, you know, if it's at market or how you should negotiate it, don't hesitate to call me. I love those calls. It gives me more data points. And, you know, I really feel like helps me to be better at what I do.
So I feel like I'm always, anytime I know somebody who's looking for a job, I'm always like, you should call my friend Beth. Like, yeah. You should call Beth.
And Beth's like, and I appreciate that.
I feel like I've been doing that since you left. Like,
you have.
Within months. Is that helpful for, you know, your friends and colleagues to just throw random candidates at you?
Well, sometimes it's more helpful than others, as you can imagine. I love it. I mean, in my mind, the more people that I connect with and know, the better. And here's the not so secret from where I sit. My candidates become my clients, right?
That makes sense.
And so it's the same. And so from where I sit, if we want to talk about relationships, those relationships are huge. You know, I've worked with candidates. I've stayed in contact with candidates for 10 years before I've had something that made sense for them, you know. And in the meantime, if other recruiters are not returning their calls or are not being helpful, you know, I think I've got a better shot at earning their business when they're in a position to hire a recruiter to help fill out their team.
Yeah. Now, and then I think about, so I'm always hearing about somebody sitting at their desk, minding their business, and then someone calls and says, like, hey, would you like to be the COO of the United Way? Or like, hey, would you like to be the general counsel of, you know, Rent the Runway or something like that?
And PayPal.
I don't know
how does that happen for me?
Those calls. Like, how do I get on the list?
Yeah.
And people say, hey, would you like to go work for Oprah? Like, she's looking for somebody. I'm placing for Oprah.
I want that job.
We all want that job.
So so let's talk about the things you ought to be doing so that recruiters can find you. Like I said earlier, it's a recruiter's job to find you if you fit the profile of like experience range and whatever that they're looking for, right? But like, you don't want to hide. So it is absolutely a check the box item to have a good LinkedIn profile these days. And I was the biggest hater of LinkedIn ever when it started out all those years ago. I was annoyed by it. We had our own database. We had other ways of doing things, but it's the world we live in. You got to have a good LinkedIn profile. You need a good headshot. We could have another conversation about bad LinkedIn headshots.
Yeah, we can.
There are so many, and it's wrong. You just have to, I would rather you have no picture than some of the pictures I see sometimes.
You want to tell people like it's a professional site. What are you doing?
Yes. So have a professional headshot. And look, if you can't use, you know, if your work doesn't take one, that usually they'll let you use it because, you know, that's what most people do it that way. But it is worth the money to go get a professional looking photo taken if you don't have access to one otherwise. It just is. So there's that. But, you know, you need to be visible on LinkedIn. So that's one thing. I think that going back to this concept of being the CEO of your own career, right? You can't just do your job. And I hate to say that because it feels like it ought to be enough, right? We're all just trying to do our jobs. And a lot of us are parents and we have partners and hobbies and other things. But I think you really need to, in terms of like managing your own brand, you got to get out there a little bit too, whether that's professional organizations, or volunteering or mentoring. You know, there ought to be a community of people who know who you are and would think of you if they get that phone call from a recruiter about the dream job with Oprah. You want, you know, you want your peers to be able to think of you too. Because I'm telling you, I love when I call somebody and I say, hey, you know, here's what I'm looking for. Who, and a lot of times I call people that I know aren't looking and aren't going to be interested, but I respect their opinion. And I say, okay, who are the top three people that come to mind when I describe this or that? Right. Mm-hmm. And if I call three or four different people and like two of the same names are coming from each of them, that's a great indicator to me that those folks have a good reputation, that a lot of people think highly of them. And those are the kind of things that make me think they need to be on my short list of candidates that I'm sending to my client.
So is that why when recruiters call, they always say your name keeps coming up? I always thought that was like a stick. Like you're so pretty.
You say that to all the candidates.
Your name keeps coming up. Your name keeps coming up. Okay.
Sumitra, everyone knows who you are. So it's not, no. It's a good thing. And it's real for you. Not everyone gets that.
My last question, and I'll let B ask her last question because we don't want to keep you or the homies too long, is what is probably the most common mistake that you see people make in connection with transitioning or wanting to transition their job?
What I would love to say is the biggest mistake that I feel people make during the interview process. Can I speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, because
yeah.
That's where my mind went when you started asking the question. So, and I think it's something people don't think of that often. So when I talk to my client after they've interviewed five people for an opening, here's what I hear a lot. The client will say, okay, so we all across the board really loved this particular candidate, but we're not sure she loved us, which is always surprising because I've talked to her and she's given me great feedback and said, this is my dream job. I want to work there. I want to work with these people. And I think what's happening is we all get so nervous during the interview process and we're doing our best and we forget at the end of the interview, if you feel like it's your dream job and you want the job, say that. And what I tell people is if, you know, as you're leaving, if they say, you know, you've asked your questions and it's gone great and they say anything else, any other questions, just say, I don't have any other questions, but I want y'all to know, I'm really excited about this role. I've enjoyed being here. I'm hopeful to move on in your process, you know, because it sounds crazy, right? Like, obviously, you've taken off work. You've probably lied to somebody about where you're going. You've done all this stuff. You're chased into a suit in your car. You know, you've worked so hard to get there. So, of course, you want to be there. But they need to hear that because they're nervous too. And they want to find somebody who's excited.
Beth, that's interesting you say that because in a recent recruitment process, we actually eliminated a candidate for that reason. We felt like the candidate was not excited about coming to us. And we felt like we were more or less twisting their arm. And then I heard, so we basically said, hey, we're going to let you off the hook. You're not really interested in coming over here. And that's okay. We knew you were a passive candidate when we spoke with you. And then we found out later that they were incredibly excited, but it just did not translate at all.
Yeah.
Right. So that's, I love that feedback. So my last question, which is incredibly important, is in the 80s, there was a war between Prince and Michael Jackson.
Oh, Lord.
I want to know, are you team Prince or are you team Michael Jackson?
Dude, there is not even, like, I don't even have to think. I'm from Minnesota. Do you know that about me?
I knew she was going to say that.
I'm from Minnesota, rolling with Prince.
You can't even, like, you, yeah. You,
try again, Beth said. Try something hard. Right.
There's just, I'm just.
Well, Beth, we want to make sure we leave time for you to give any parting words you like to give to the homies and also let them know how they can find you or stay in contact with you.
Yes, absolutely. So I would love to, and, you know, I talk to people all the time who are non-lawyers. We actually do a lot of executive search these days too. And, you know, I'm just happy to kind of help or look over a resume or offer words of advice. So please feel free to take a look at our website is nnlegalsearch.com. And we'd love to be there for the homies for questions, for thoughts. We'd love to, you know, be a resource. And as people are trying, I love this stuff. So it's, you know, it's fun for me.
Well, you've been awesome. And thank you so much for coming out and sharing your words of wisdom with the homies. We really appreciate it. Homies, for those of you who are listening, if you have questions, feel free to email us at questions@corporatehomie.com.
Right. And of course, you can follow us on all things social. We're at Corporate Homie on all the social media platforms. And we would appreciate a 5-star review of the podcast if you are enjoying the show. And until next time,
hustle hard, homies.
All of you, get you a twin. Get you another homie.